Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, May 9th, 2023. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, it's a beautiful day, Melody. Hello, hello. And hey, happy National Lost Sock Memorial Day. How about that? Another crazy off the wall. I mean, there were several other days to celebrate today, but none of them made sense or resonated like this one. Yeah, I'm afraid to say it's time to say goodbye to all of those single socks in the world, or at least in your dresser. You know, the one whose mates have been lost to the great unknown. Where all those missing socks go, you ask? Is there a washing machine or dryer heaven or worse? Well, it's a question that people from all walks of life have been trying to solve for centuries. Well, to commemorate this hallowed day, I went through my sock drawer earlier this afternoon only to find seven single socks, all various designs of black, that have been patiently waiting for the return of their partner for God only knows how long. And now, Melody, they're in the trash can. Yes, an unseemly
great way
demise.
To clean out your drawers.
Indeed, indeed.
And
gold is up.
They're good dog toys.
Yes, they are. And cat toys when you fill them with garlic and catnip.
Ew.
All that good stuff.
Yeah. Gold today. Let's get right to the gold prices today, ladies and gentlemen, because, you know, we have it up another day, $13.10 at $2,035. Let's just take a peek at what the COMEX June. We're still on June 2041. So pretty neat gold and silver prices. Silver was up 2 pennies today at 25.66. Platinum was up $32, 3%. 1115. Palladium was up 19 at 1649. So actually, platinum gets the gold star today for outpacing all the other precious metals. So there you have it there. The USDX today, and that's actually stronger, 2.26 at 101.64. Crude oil was up 32 cents at 73.48. And the paper markets today, I know they were struggling earlier in the day. I don't think they, you know, everybody's waiting for this stupid debt ceiling thing. It's like, folks, they're not going to, I mean, it's just dumb. They're going to do it. It's just a, you know, they're playing a chicken right now to see who's going to, you know, get what they want. I have no problem with, I don't understand why every politician in D.C. wouldn't want to see some sort of a cutback. Somehow to rein in expenses. Somewhere where something has to give a little something. Although it's just ridiculous to begin with, because it, no matter what they cut back, it's not going to change anything. We still have debt too great to be paid. That's not going to change. But I mean, it's just so, and they're not going to default. They already said they're not going to allow it to default. So, you know, the whole thing is just stupid, you know. And, but anyway, that's some of the things that, you know, perhaps we saw a little gain in gold today. And, of course, everybody's waiting for some inflation numbers to come out. Did they come out tomorrow or Wednesday, Dave?
Tomorrow is Wednesday, yeah.
Oh, well, tomorrow or Thursday, I meant.
Oh.
What day do they come out? Do you know?
Not today.
Not what? We know that. So we got that one down. But I don't know if this will tell me. I'm just curious now. Ba-bum. We have that big meeting. It's always funny. You know, they're having that big meeting today, Biden and McCarthy. They wait till 4 o'clock. They can't do it when the markets are working. Or, you know, it's they got to wait until 4 o'clock. Can't do anything. So if it would be terrible news, then they have at least until tomorrow morning to get that plunge protection team out to sort of make sure that it's not too bad. No, I can't find it. Maybe you can. Wednesday, we have the consumer price index report slated for Wednesday and the PPI on Thursday. So that's what everyone is waiting for. But in the meantime, you had the Dow down 56 points. The S&P was down 18 and the NASDAQ was down 77. European markets, the only one that was positive was Germany. All the rest were in red. Asia, Nikkei was positive. The rest were in red. 10-year yield, that's the first time I saw it green, 3.528. So that was up 0.009 for the 10-year yield. And let's take a peek. All the oils are positive. Natural gas was up 1.25%, 2.26. So that pretty much says about everything, Dave. We have, let me go ahead and get to my slate, my other screen here, and hopefully I didn't lose it. I didn't. You know, we were talking about the debt ceiling, and there's all kinds of crazy things coming out on this. And again, my personal opinion, they're not going to default on this stupid debt. They should. Absolutely, they should. But they won't. They're not going to. But a union of government employees sued Janet Yellen and Biden today to try to stop them from complying with the law that limits the government's debt ceiling, which the lawsuit contends is unconstitutional. The lawsuit comes just weeks before Yellen says the government is going to default its debt if Congress fails to raise the current $31.4 trillion borrowing limit. Financial markets have become increasingly nervous. They don't seem to be really increasingly nervous, but that's what they want us to think about the potential for the default. Could trigger a global finance, a financial crisis. And again, they're meeting tonight at 4 o'clock in public. The two sides remain far apart. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, McCarthy, Congress demand steep spending cuts, which they should have. The administration, President Biden, wants it to be done cleanly, nothing attached to it, just do it. And I don't think that's the way it should be done, but that's my personal opinion. The lawsuit is filed by the National Association of Government Employees, says that if Yellen abides by the debt limit once it becomes binding, she would have to choose which federal obligations to actually pay. Some analysts have argued that the government could prioritize interest payments on Treasury bonds, and of course that would ensure that the U.S. wouldn't default. Treasuries have long been regarded as the safest instruments in the world, but they're not guaranteed, but everybody thinks they are. But under the Constitution, the lawsuit argues the president and the Treasury Secretary have no authority to decide which payments to make because the Constitution grants spending power to Congress. Doing so, it contends, would violate the Constitution's separation of powers. Dave.
Yeah, this, boy, this is continues to be an issue fraught with just so many different angles. I do ultimately agree with you, Melody, that the leadership, quote unquote, will not allow the nation to default. Although, you know, as we get closer and closer to that cutoff time, which Yellen now says could be as early as June 1st, I think there's probably a little bit of buffer in that posturing. You know, let's face it. I guess you and I have a fundamental disagreement on this. We both want to see federal budgets brought under control in a spending and taxation sense. I don't believe messing around with the nation's debt ceiling, because of the status of the dollar, like it or not, the fact that treasury markets are so dependent on sort of a clean bill of health, if you will, that guarantees the full faith and credit of the U.S., of the U.S. government, that is. And that, frankly, if something would happen, if these nutcases in the Freedom Caucus were to somehow tie the House's hands in a bill that, you know, doesn't have the kinds of cuts that they're demanding McCarthy support and go after. You know, again, I think there would be enough one, two handfuls of Republicans that would understand the catastrophic consequences to employment, to GDP, and to the Treasury market in general, if there were default, that they would support some kind of plan. But look, we're one of two nations in the whole world that have this debt ceiling. Now, of course, we're the largest economy. You know, you can argue, on the other hand, the largest federal budget and the largest debt, national debt, in the entire world. But, you know, if there were a mandate to do a stinking budget and appropriation bills every year, like we used to do decades ago, then, you know, the debt ceiling can be automatically lifted with no concern, because you're doing your negotiations on spending in that process, where I think it rightly belongs. And anyway, it's just a long-winded way of saying that I agree that that, although, you know, the closer we get, the more nerve-wracking it seems to get. We will have a debt ceiling deal, perhaps even by Memorial Day, so all the poor souls can go back to their home districts and go to their barbecue fundraisers.
Well, I mean, I agree, and you know, I'm assuming you're including both sides on this. And but you know, it's true though. The American people have no idea. I mean, they talk about debt, and that these words are thrown about. People don't understand. People don't understand that we really do. It will never be paid. It will eventually have to be addressed. Something will come along. Maybe not this time, but something in the future. And so it should be spoken about. It should be addressed. And you had made a comment, and I mean, I agree, you know, if they were doing what they were supposed to do in the beginning, I mean, we shouldn't be in this amount of debt that we are, but look where a lot of this debt has been created. And it's debt that, you know, it's, you know, just they're obligated to it now to some degree in certain, you know, to certain parts and so forth. But we were, you said we're one of two
countries in the world.
Well,
that have a debt ceiling.
Well, you know what? We were the country of the world where we were different. Were different. And we were a special nation. And somehow, and so we now just become like all the rest. We're no longer special. We're no longer, you know, people come here not to be Americans anymore. Many just come here to, you know, for whatever reasons anymore, because they can. And it's, and, you know, I get, but, you know, you can't, you know, people in D.C., they don't talk about it. They don't, you know, because you're right. They'll all go home to their little picnics and, you know, both sides will, you know, get their campaign funds and start working on their reelections and say, see what we did. It's sad and it's pathetic anymore. And
yeah,
I guess it's
appropriate that the Tony Award nominations just came out. I mean, you talk about performance art. that's what so much of politics is today, particularly at the federal level, but you know, at all levels to a certain extent, unfortunately.
I agree.
You know, the money that has so totally overtaken and corrupted our politics is the number one cause.
Absolutely. And it's so yeah, and it changes our nation. Couple clicks. I don't know if I'm still, am I still connected?
You are loud and clear.
Okay. So, and you know, it's that corruption affects our country and the way the citizens of this nation live. And it's, and they will never be held accountable for it. So maybe a default at this time would be good, because then maybe these people would be held accountable for something.
Well, yeah, when GDP falls 4 to 6% and there's 6 to 8 million people out of work.
AI is gonna take over those jobs anyway. So there's gonna be 8 million jobs lost anyway.
That's the compounding effect that'll add insult to injury. It's brutal out there, and the Washington does set the tone. I like to think of myself as an optimist in the sense that, you know, even though things are so messed up, dysfunctional, you know, I still see a way out. You know, the door's cracked. It's not completely shut and locked. But I think it's the cause of so many of our ills on so many different levels. Our rampant divisiveness, just the broad tribalism where we just find ourselves going back into our own respective corners and putting our hands over our ears and going, nah, 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 nah. That's certainly no way out of the hole that we're in. It's going to take people like you and me, Melody, I'm afraid, with our voices to get people to take some action.
Absolutely. And we're going to have to take some action going into this break. So we'll be right back. Please stay with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And coins available. Silver Eagles actually came down a whole quarter. So there you go. Woohoo! So everything is live. I think the only thing that has delays are the Canadian maple leaves, both gold and the silver. But at one point in time, a couple of weeks ago, they were 3 weeks out. Now they're only 1 week out. So things are getting better. I think people are kind of sitting back just waiting to see what happens. And, you know, it's just another event. It's just another mark in time that people sit and wait for things to happen instead of doing things. So don't be one of them. Do it. Get it done. Then you can sit back, relax, and watch it unfold, should it unfold. You know, we spent a lot of time on the debt today, and so there's things, commercial real estate, you've been hearing that a lot. But boy, oh boy, if you listen to Jim Cramer on TV, there's no problems with the commercial real estate. But we're looking at office buildings all across the country that stand largely unoccupied. And yes, it could be a very big risk to our financial system. And that's one takeaway from, and this is a new report from the Fed that offers a twice yearly assessment of what it sees as its biggest concerns. Now, there's this huge shift in where white-collar staff decides to work is rippling through the commercial real estate market. Remember, everybody wants to work at home. Nobody Yay. Wants to go to offices anymore. And I think we were talking about that in the beginning of 2020. Well, what's going to happen to all of these vacant buildings, commercial buildings that people aren't working in anymore? And they're expensive. So this, you know, the demand for this office space is just, you know, it gets battered. So, yeah, this could very well affect the financial sector. And the magnitude of a correction in property values could be sizable and therefore lead to credit losses for holders of commercial real estate debt. Now, again, this was from the Fed Financial Stability Report, and that was released yesterday, Dave.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting example of top-down federalism, in a sense. I just remember that from my old grad school days. You know, on a macro sense, you know, that's a big shift in what happens to urban downtowns across the country and in suburbs where most of these office buildings are located. But in terms of the valuation of these, you know, quarter to half to three quarter empty office complexes, they have a multiplier effect. You look at particularly local, municipal, and school district tax funding. Just don't kill the messenger. I mean, it just so much of it depends on property taxation. And when office buildings are vacant, the owners typically go to their county or state, appeal their tax assessment, get significant decreases, and you know the local governments, and we're not just talking about the New York cities and the Philadelphias of the world. We're talking about, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30, 50,000 population communities that, for better or for worse, and in this case, it's for worse. You know, their over reliance on property taxes really gets affected, and of course there are other things, other effects going on as well. I mean, it's interesting that the Fed's bank supervisors, they're the ones who are charged with, you know, oversight of lenders, have expanded their examination procedures for banks with significant exposure to commercial real estate now. Mortgages for non-farm, non-residential commercial real estate, which includes offices, are just a small slice of all assets held by banks, according to the Fed. But those mortgages represent one-fifth of total assets for the smallest banks. Of course, some having more exposure than others. And this, the Fed's quarterly survey of loan officers suggests that banks are more wary than they've been in years about extending for credit loans for commercial real estate projects, new ones. That's a shift that's just gotten worse, depending on your, you know, especially if you're a commercial real estate builder or investor, since early 2022. Anyway, they're saying those loan standards are now the tightest since the 2008 Great Recession.
So, yep, coming about in many different ways. So sometimes when you least expect it. Briefly here, we have bank borrowing from discount windows. That's way down. So that could be good news, at least temporarily. The discount window borrowing had jumped to $153 billion in March after the implosion of SVB. The big drop in discount borrowing suggests that First Republic, which was taken over by FDIC and sold for parts last week, was the central borrower from the Fed. So, you know, we're not sure where that's all leading, but it, you know, that they, that just react, that's just a reaction to what was happening. So
yeah, yeah, it can't always depend on, well, you can depend on mom and pop, yeah, i.e. the Fed,
unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, always the fallback. But yeah, this next news item about the too big to fails, I find eye-opening.
Yeah. And you're right. You have this, the mainstream media wants us to believe that depositors have been fleeing the smaller regional commercial banks for the too big to fail behemoths that, you know, everyone perceives them as a safe haven. And because these mega banks are the same ones that the Fed has been bailing out since 2008, that narrative requires believing that our fellow Americans, in the words of Pam and Russ Martins, are dumber than a stump. That's funny. The Martins report in yesterday's Wall Street on Parade that the 25 largest banks in the U.S. lost a total of $644 billion in deposits between April 27th, 2022 and April 26th of this year. The three largest banks in the U.S. as measured by deposits are, of course, you know, you can guess them, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo. Over the one-year period that I just mentioned, J.P. Morgan lost $184 billion in deposits, BOA lost $162 billion, and Wells Fargo lost $119 billion. And again, this is a combined loss of $465 billion. 72% of the decline in deposits at the 25 largest banks. The Martins report that deposit losses at J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo are more than twice what the 4,000 small banks lost in total during this same period. Their combined loss in deposits was just $210 billion, Dave.
That isn't bad enough today.
I know, but
the Martins are telling us about a team of academics at four separate universities who've presented what they call compelling evidence that one, unnamed, one of the four largest U.S. banks with assets above $1 trillion could be at risk of a bank run. The study, they say, focuses on unrealized losses on assets on the books of U.S. banks in a category called held to maturity, which under current accounting rules doesn't have to be marked to their market value, as well as unrealized losses on debt securities that also have not been marked to market value unless they're sold, say to raise cash for to pay fleeing depositors. Well, the study found that the U.S. banking system's market value of those assets, listen to this, is $2.2 trillion lower than suggested by their book value of assets, accounting for loan portfolios held to maturity. And that, again, probably, I can't imagine that that includes a number of derivative products. They then combine, the authors combine that finding with the threat posed to banks that hold large quantities of uninsured deposits, you know, the sums in excess of the FDIC cap of $250,000 per depositor per bank. Now, according to the Martins research, there are only four U.S. chartered banks that have assets above $1 trillion. Again, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Bank of America, Citibank, and Wells Fargo. Now, which one of those four mega banks the authors are referring to in their report study remains a mystery. They declined to reveal it, not in the report, nor to the Martins. But as the Martins rightly suggest, short sellers in the financial markets will undoubtedly get to the bottom of the regulatory filings by the four banks to figure out which one of them is the culprit. So they conclude federal regulators and Congress has to move this issue to the top of their banking crisis priority list. Just 15 short years ago, Citigroup, Citibank, received the largest bailout in U.S. banking history during and after the Great Recession. Its stock traded at 99 cents in early 2009. So as the Martins again warn, until Congress gets serious about breaking up these too big to fail mega banks, and restoring our banking system, well, the protections of the Glass-Steagall Act, which were repealed in 1999, every American who deposits money in places other than their mattress is at risk of an unstable financial system. Melody.
Gold, Dave, gold.
Yes.
But, you know, it's interesting because when you look at this four, you think, well, Wells Fargo, they've been crooks. They're probably followed fairly well. So it's probably not them. You know, you can say, well, there's a lot of corruption in Wells Fargo, so maybe it is them, but they're probably watched. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've been under a microscope now for close to 10 years with their antics.
So then we would have Citibank, you know. Yeah. It could be J.P. Morgan.
Boy, five-time felons.
Yep.
Yep.
Bank of America helped with the crisis back in 2008. Warren Buffett.
Merrill Lynch.
Buffett bailed out Bank of America, didn't he? I think he. But anyway, so could be J.P. Morgan Chase, the biggest one. No one ever looks at the biggest guy. So, anyway, let's go ahead and talk about. Let's go to April jobs. The indicators in the April payrolls report published last Friday tells a near universal story, how America's workers continue to experience the strongest labor market in years, you know, maybe even the best on record, so they say. There's a lot of doom and gloom about the economy, certainly by the bank failures that we've been talking about that raises lots of questions. And the details of the latest jobs report should put those worries to rest, but you know, with the labor market being still strong, thinking that there's a lot of opportunities for workers. Economist Kathy Bosjanic at Nationwide says the labor market surprisingly remains hot and tight, as indicated by a trifecta of strength, reported in three categories in April, which is employment, unemployment rate, and the average hourly earnings. So why does this cause concern, Dave?
Well,
I mean, I know what the concern is, but.
Well, I think Bosjanic sort of overstates the strength issue. Labor market adds 253,000 jobs in April. Okay, that's better than expected. Over 650,000 over the past 3 months. Although some of them, if not a lot, involved hiring back workers who'd been laid off during the pandemic. But the labor force participation rate among prime age workers between 25 and 54 years old continued to climb, 83.3%. And that's an official recovery to levels last seen in the Great Recession. For prime age women, participation is the highest on record at just about 78%. Now, wages rose at a faster rate last month, 0.5%, after steadily sort of decelerating since last November. Over the past 3 months, average hourly earnings are up an annualized 4.2%, down from the 4.5% from the previous 3 months. And that's one of the areas that I think she overstates that's a strength. Yeah, down 0.3%. But still well above the level that the Fed wants to see in terms of getting to its inflation goal. And the unemployment rate, well, that's a joke. I mean, again, it's the point of the 3.456%. headline unemployment rate, which is meaningless because it doesn't include people who want to work who are discouraged. And those are just the short time discouraged, 6 months. Don't even ask about the long term discouraged who just raised their hands and gave up years ago. So, you know, it's we've got an unemployment rate that's at least double what the BLS and mainstream media report. So I don't know. I mean, they say that, you know, the report and these impacts are going to concern the Fed. And I have no doubt that they will. Just as I'm concerned, I'm not going to be able to finish my thought because of another break.
Another one. The music distracted you, but we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Thank you, Todd, for that new music to my ear, anyway, that lead-in, unless I heard it incorrectly. Hey, former Treasury Secretary and Harvard Law School professor Larry Tribe, who we've been quoting a lot in this program, has an op-ed in Saturday's New York Times that sort of resonated with me. And I hate doing this, but Tribe's column is so timely that I thought it would do listeners a disservice to try and tell you his main points by paraphrasing him. So instead, here for your consideration is Tribe in his own words. Yes, I'm afraid it's about the debt ceiling, because I think this has more potential than we're giving it credit for. Okay, quote, over the years, Congress has raised the debt ceiling scores of times, most recently 2 years ago when it set the cap at $31.4 trillion. We hit that amount on January 19 and are being told that the extraordinary measures Treasury has available to get around it are about to run out. When that happens, all you know what will break loose. Well, taking advantage of that prospect, congressional Republicans are threatening to do nothing unless the administration agrees to slash lots of government programs that their party has had in its sights. And if the president caves to their demands, they will agree to raise the cap until this crisis occurs again. Then they will surely pursue the same game of chicken, or maybe more accurately, Russian roulette. It's a complicated situation to be sure, but a solution is staring us in the face. Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned, ever. Proponents of the unconstitutionality argument, like the government employee union that sued Biden and Yellen today, say that when Congress enacted the debt limit way back when, effectively forcing the U.S. to stop borrowing to honor its debts when that limit was reached, it built a violation of that constitutional command into our fiscal structure. And that as a result, that limit and all that followed are invalid. Then, you know, I've never agreed with that argument. It raises thorny questions about the appropriate way to interpret the text. Namely, does Section 4, read properly, prohibit anything beyond putting the federal government into default? If so, which actions does it forbid? And most important, could this interpretation open the door for dangerous presidential overreach if Section 4 empowers the president single-handedly to declare laws he dislikes unconstitutional? I still worry about those questions, but I've come to believe that they are the wrong ones for us to be asking. While teaching constitutional law, I often explored the problem of bloated presidential power, the paradox of having to choose among a set of indisputably bad options. During my last semester teaching, I studied the most insightful literature and concluded that we need to reframe the debt argument. The question isn't whether the president can tear up the debt limit statute to ensure that the Treasury Department can continue paying bills submitted by veterans' hospitals or military contractors or even pension funds that purchased government bonds. The question isn't whether the president can, in effect, become a one-person Supreme Court striking down laws passed by Congress. The right question is whether Congress, after passing the spending bills that created these debts in the first place, can invoke an arbitrary dollar limit to force the president and his administration to do its bidding. There is only one right answer to that question, and it is no. There's only one person with the power to give Congress that answer, the President of the United States. As a practical matter, what that means is this. Mr. Biden must tell Congress in no uncertain terms and as soon as possible, before it's too late to avert a financial crisis, that the United States will pay all its bills as they come due, even if the Treasury Department must borrow more than Congress has said it can. President should remind Congress of the nation, I'm bound by my oath to preserve and protect the Constitution to prevent the country from defaulting on its debt for the first time in our entire history. Above all, the president should say with clarity, my duty faithfully to execute the laws extend to all spending laws Congress has enacted, laws that bind whoever sits in this office, laws that Congress enacted without worrying about the statute capping the amount that we can borrow. By taking that position, the president would not be usurping Congress's lawmaking power or its power of the purse, nor would he be usurping the Supreme Court's power to say what the law is, as Chief Justice John Marshall once put it. Mr. Biden would simply be doing his duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, even if doing so leaves one law, that is the borrowing limit first enacted in 1917, temporarily on the cutting room floor. Ignoring one law in order to uphold every other has compelling historical precedent. It's precisely what Abraham Lincoln did when he briefly overrode the habeas corpus law in 1861 to save the Union, later saying to Congress, "Are the laws, all the laws but one, to go unexecuted and the government itself go to pieces, lest that one be violated?" For a president to pick the lesser of two evils when no other option exists, except for a $1 trillion platinum coin, is the essence of constitutional leadership, not the act of a tyrant. And there's no doubt that ignoring the debt ceiling until Congress either raises or abolishes it is a lesser evil than those with lawful claims against the Treasury out in the cold. Of course, my solution might roil the bond markets and cause lenders to demand a premium for extending credit to the U.S., but no path out of the dilemma is without risk. Now, some will say that letting the president ignore the statutory limit on borrowing would give him too much power and represent a dangerous step in a tyrannical direction. Wrong. What I propose would in truth give the president a lot less power than entrusting him to decide which of the government's promises to honor and which creditors to stiff, a power that the Supreme Court denied him when it handed down a 1998 decision that prevented him from vetoing line items within a budget. In any event, Section 4 prohibits the president from permanently stiffing our creditors, even those required to wait their turn after the Treasury runs dry. So even if Speaker McCarthy and those pulling his strings succeed in making some of those creditors wait, it wouldn't eliminate our debts. It would merely replace them with IOUs. And that's just debt in another form. Unquote. Tell me what you think about Tribe's thoughts about the debt ceiling issue in general. Send me an email, daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. I'll read all responses on a future financial survival program. Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets. It, as usual, features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought column, this one on patients losing trust in doctors. Of course, there's Melody's weekly financial markets recap, and I have an article that asks, is PacWest Bank next? So, the banking system is sound and resilient. That's what the Fed's press release last Wednesday said in the statement announcing another 25 basis point interest rate hike. Sound and resilient. A few hours later, multiple media sources reported that PacWest Bank is exploring strategic options, including a possible sale. Is PacWest the next to fail? Well, shares of PacWest stock were already down about 80% since February. After the latest news hit, the stock took another 50% nosedive. In fact, since January 1st, its share prices tanked, having fallen from just under $23 a share to a new 52-week low of $3.17 as of Thursday's close. It's back up to $5.79 a share as of this morning, but still a shadow of its former self. Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal noted in his column the same day that overall the banking system may be sound and resilient, but there's clearly anxiety surrounding individual banks that hasn't gone away. Well, at the same time, Tennessee-based First Horizon Bank also fell 33% after that regional lender and TD Bank announced that they were terminating their merger agreement. The banks jointly said that the move was because of uncertainty around when, not if, TD would receive regulatory approval for the deal and was not related to First Horizon. Other notable declines included a 38% drop for Western Alliance, 12% for Zions Bank Corp. Of course, the Spider S&P Regional Banking ETF was down more than 5%. Western Alliance's fall came despite the company advising Wednesday evening that deposits had grown since the end of March. Their CEO, Tom Michaud, said, "That hasn't taken the heat off the stock or the bond prices. Investors are very nervous. And I think what they're nervous about is the fact that Silicon Valley lost 75% of their deposits in 36 hours. There's not a bank in the world that could really sustain that. So let's get this out of the way right now. First Republic Bank won't be the last U.S. bank to fail. All this latest hullabaloo comes less than a week after L.A.'s First Republic was seized by the FDIC and sold at a big discount to the U.S.'s largest bank and five-time felon, J.P. Morgan Chase. First Republic, which is the nation's third bank failure this year, had searched for weeks for a suitor near $100 billion deposit withdrawals in the first quarter, but no help came. So regulators stepped in. Many regional banks saw deposit outflows in March around the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, raising questions about the stability of their funding and the value of some assets on their books that were not marked to market. Anticipated regulatory changes have also clouded the long-term profit outlook for the group. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon and Fed Chair Jerome Powell separately expressed optimism that the initial wave of bank failures has passed. But the drops in a broader array of financial stocks show that investors don't necessarily agree, nor did depositors. And now, after these recent events, confidence in America's financial system is slipping. Recall the Martin's article in Wall Street on Parade we mentioned earlier today, and that this affecting the mega banks as well. According to a new Gallup poll, almost one half of the American population is either moderately, 29%, or very, 19%, worried about the safety of their money parked in banks. Interestingly, the level of concern expressed in the latest poll is similar to the findings Gallup found shortly after the collapse of Lehman Brothers in September 2008. Wiesenthal also points to another sentence in the Fed's release last Wednesday that reads, tighter credit conditions for households and businesses are likely to weigh on economic activity, hiring, and inflation. And that, he says, gets to the big macro takeaway, namely that while inflation is still hot, there's now a live possibility that the Fed has gotten to the end of the hiking cycle. His post-meeting press conference on Wednesday, Powell claimed that no hike or a pause at the next meeting, mid-June, is a real possibility. He also said he was encouraged by the trajectory of the labor market. Fewer job openings, lower wage growth, higher labor force participation. You know the gist. Well, as of this morning, the CMA Group's report, a group reports that about 88% of interest rate futures traders expect the Fed to keep rates steady at 5 to 5.25% at the conclusion of its next meeting on June 14th. The other 12% see a 25 basis point rate hike. Well, now that April's job report is out, with the Labor Department reporting 253,000 jobs having been added to the economy last month, let's see what new Fed speak and actions come over the next 4 weeks as a result. And that is all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd Waite, to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. It's been fun. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my